Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Ken Go of the Oregonian has got his finger on the pulse of many things. College football, college basketball, track and field, so much. Let's start with Hayward Field, Ken Go. What's going on with Hayward Field? Why are so many people divided over what's happening there?
Well, it's just what they've decided to do with it. The process rejected any input from the community, and there were a lot of people in the community that had a real strong feeling about the old Hayward Field. And two, the design is pretty spectacular for a track stadium. But I think a lot of people in the community wonder if they need something that spectacular. And yeah, it's going to be nice for the World Outdoor Championships in 2021 when 205 countries come to Eugene to visit the school and see the stadium and compete there. But what's going to happen after that? I mean, the previous stadium had somewhere less than 9,000 seats. It was rarely full. The new one's going to have 12,500 permanent seats. Is it maybe just too big and grand for regular season college track or even conference championship sort of track?
Nearly 100 years old, isn't it? About 100 years old?
Yeah, it was. I believe 99 before the wrecking ball hit. The new one is spectacular. I mean, it really sort of takes your breath away when you see it. But it also, to me, I mean, it's just my opinion, it doesn't really fit with the buildings around it. It just sort of dominates them.
Why did they want to do that? Is that just Nike's fingerprints on a big project? Let's go big. Why dabble?
I don't think it's Nike as much as I think it's Phil Knight. That's where the money's coming from. And he assembled a group of people that went around the world and looked at the best track stadiums there were, and they came up with this design. And it's going to be spectacular for a track stadium in the United States. There's going to be nothing like it, nothing close to like it. But the question is, does it need to be that big and grand? It'll work nicely for a World Outdoor Championships, but that's a once in a lifetime event. After that, what?
I mean, what do they do there?
Maybe the Prefontaine Classic, but that's a once in a year meet. Other than that, I mean, what are they going to do there? What events are they going to have that are going to come close to filling that thing up?
It has this giant phallic tower on one end. I heard somebody call it the Fildo. On social media, what is that tower?
Essentially, it's as my understanding is the ground level is going to be sort of a museum to the University of Oregon track, and then there's going to be used for office space and meeting rooms. It's sort of weird. It doesn't really look like it belongs there. Originally, they wanted to name it the Bowerman Tower, but the Bowerman family, Bill Bowerman's the former Oregon track coach, U.S. Olympic track coach, co-founder of Nike. The Bowerman family wanted nothing to do with it. They hated it. They said, don't put our name on it. So I'm not sure what it's going to be called. But like you say, yeah, the public's chipping in with a lot of interesting possibilities. And it does look very phallic.
You
see it and you go, oh my God, what are you doing here?
Yeah, that's what I thought. And then I thought, well, Phil Knight asserting his will there over the stadium. But it's is it made perhaps for an Olympic Games? I mean, are they thinking, hey, let's build something where if we do get an Olympics one day, we get it here?
I don't think so. I don't, even if they add all the temporary seating, I don't think it's big enough for Olympic Games, one. And two, I don't know how Oregon could even dream of hosting Olympic Games. Now, I'll say I cast doubt on the fact Oregon could ever host a World Outdoor Championships, and it's going to happen. But you're not talking just about track then. I mean, you're talking about all kinds of facilities that will have to be built and all sorts of infrastructure that the state doesn't have that somebody will have to create. I mean, I think the Olympic Games is pie in the sky. And a lot of people wonder why a city, a state, a community would want to host the Olympic Games, because all these facilities, you've been to them, all these facilities get built and they look really great. And then what? It's sort of what we're at with the track stadium. What do you do with a luge stadium or a fencing facility for fencing or a swimming pavilion? I mean, once the Olympics go, then you're left with all these buildings that cost all this money to build, and what do you use them for? I mean, the stadium in London was going to be a track stadium, a soccer stadium, but it's really too big for that. And you know, they host a track meet occasionally. They had the World Outdoor Championships there in 2017, but really it's not very functional for a lot of other things.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian, OregonLive.com, is our guest. I'm struck by that project going on at Hayward Field, and then Oregon State in football trying to redo the west side of Reister Stadium. Scott Barnes says it'll get done. They will downsize or right-size the stadium by removing some seats, try to make it more modern. I think this is totally necessary. Do you believe they get it done at Oregon State in a way that works?
I think they have to. I agree with you. I think it's totally necessary that, you know, the stadium itself, you know, you go there and it just looks incomplete because the east side is looks like college football stadium, and the west side looks like something that, you know, was a decrepit old high school stadium from Texas. I mean, it's just not, you know, it's way bigger than anything you see in Oregon, but it doesn't look like a major college football stadium, that side of it, at all. And if they're going to be a Division I school, if they're going to try to compete at that level, and if they're going to try to recruit to that stadium, and they're going to try to convince people to go to it to watch games, I think they need to upgrade. And they know that. I mean, I'm not saying anything they don't know.
We ordered a pizza the other night. We got combination with sausage on one side, and then the kids just got cheese. And I thought, Reister Stadium.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it just looks unfinished, and it is. I mean, they did what they could with the money they had, which was to fix the one side of the stadium, and they didn't have enough money to do the other side, so they didn't do anything. But yeah, at some point, they've got to finish it.
Justin Herbert, Jake Luton, two quarterbacks that I think, you know, Luton had a great year, only three interceptions, 28 touchdowns. Patriots talking to him today. Herbert expected to be a top 10 pick in the draft. Where do you see those guys as pros? You've been around, you've seen Joey Harrington, Akili Smith, and Derek Anderson. Where do these guys fit?
Well, I think Herbert's got a chance to be pretty good. He's got every physical tool you could want. He's smart enough. My question about him is none of those things. It's more his leadership skills, his, you know, the really good quarterbacks I've been around, college quarterbacks, they had something about them. It's sort of hard to define, but they walk into a room and everybody turns and looks at him, and they say, yeah, this is the guy. This is the leader. This is the guy that's going to take you down the field. And my favorite quarterback along those lines is Bill Musgrave, who had a fraction of Justin Herbert's physical ability, but he had every intangible you could want, including the leadership skills. I've told this story many times, and pardon me if I told it on your show, but he was a redshirt freshman. He was following Chris Miller, who was a first-round draft choice. And they called a play. He's in the huddle. They huddled then. And it was a pass play, and everybody's looking at him like, is this the right call? And Musgrave just turned to these veteran receivers and said, just catch it. I mean, that's the kind of leadership skills he had, and that's why he wound up playing in the NFL, despite the fact he was very, very marginal talent. And that's what I don't know about Herbert. You know, he might have that, but I never saw it while he was playing at Oregon.
Ken Goh, appreciate all you do. Before I cut you loose, in college basketball, you've got the Oregon women's program that I think is going to catch lightning in a bottle. I'm trying to figure out if there's been a collection or a team in any sport that is this talented, this good, this complete. You've been around. Where do you put the Oregon women's basketball program?
You know, that's a good point. And I was thinking about that, too, the other day when I was watching them beat Stanford on television. And I was thinking, you know, this team has every piece you could want. It's got the go-to player, the difference maker sort of player. It's got really good complementary pieces. They got the great low post player in Ruthie. They got Satu Sabali, who's phenomenal physical talent, big, can run the floor, can shoot from outside, can rebound, can play defense. And it's got other players that are just really good role players to fit in around him. And it just looks like a Final Four team. I covered a number of men's Final Fours. I've never covered a woman's Final Four, but the men's Final Fours, the teams that made it were like that. They had a really great player, and they had other players that were almost that good who knew their roles. And then they had these role players that you know, just sort of were the mortar between the stones there, who did their jobs and did them well. And, you know, everybody knew their roles. They were well coached. They executed. And they played with a lot of confidence. And I think this team has every intangible you could want, you know, every tangible you could want. That doesn't mean they're going to win the national championship, but they're in a position to, you know, and that isn't always within a team's control. You know, stuff happens, the ball bounces, you know, you get in a Michigan situation where they call a timeout when they didn't have one, you know, people make mistakes or whatever on the big stage. But if things bounce right, they got a chance to do it.
Ken Goh, you're the best. I appreciate you, man.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff from Ken Goh. See the spectrum that he can talk. He could talk football. He could talk track and field. Fildo. He could talk women's college basketball. All right, I got a special for Eugene listeners listening on Fox Sports Eugene. That's K-O-R-E, Core. We have a pair of all-session tickets to the Pac-12 Women's Basketball Tournament in Las Vegas. Tickets only. This does not include your hotel, your airfare. Tickets only, and it's only for someone serious about going to the Pac-12 tournament. First caller that calls in and can tell K-O-R-E how many points did Aaron Boley score against Stanford gets the tickets. You got to be a Eugene listener because you're going to have to pick them up there, and you have to be listening on Core, K-O-R-E, to enter. And here's the number. And again, how many points did Aaron Boley score against Stanford? You get an all-session ticket, a pair of all-session tickets to the Pac-12 Women's Tournament in Vegas. 541-343-KORE. That's 541-343-KORE. How many points did Aaron Boley score against Stanford? First person to call in with the correct answer gets the tickets. Chelsea Audio Video, let me tell you a story. I'm in my house. I got my hands full. My wife had gone to the grocery store. Nowadays, you got no bags, right? So I'm carrying everything in by hand. I'm walking into a dark house. The five-year-old is right by my right hip. I open the garage door. And I'm worried about dropping stuff, tripping over stuff, dropping the things that are in my hands. The five-year-old spins around and pushes the button on the wall. She knows exactly which button to set which scene. It lights a pathway into the house. Suddenly, like without saying a word, I'm like, oh, you knew to do that. Chelsea Audio Video did that. And they did that in our house. They put in their Control 4 system. That's just a small way that shows you, it's a small example of what they can do for you. The idea is that technology can make your home smarter. You can use your mobile device to do a lot of this stuff. Make change your thermostat, unlock doors, lock doors, your alarm system on, check your security cameras, all that in your hands. But it's just that anecdotal evidence there that, like, the five-year-old knowing that she just needs to push that button on the wall and she knows which button to push to set what scene, it just blows me away. Thank you, Chelsea Audio Video, for doing that in our house. I encourage you to go to ChelseaAudioVideo.com. Check out their Control 4 system. Make your house smarter. They will amaze you with what they can do. They do audio and video, of course, but the Control 4 system and that technology is phenomenal. Let's go to the phone lines. Jeff's in Hillsboro. Jeff, how are things in Hillsboro?
Not as good as things in Portland.
Hillsboro's a sleeping giant, though. I love Hillsboro.
Just getting ready for the hops, I guess.
There you go.
Just where I work out here. But I just think I'm from Eugene, and I think it's crazy how we're complaining about things being too nice. Like, we were never filling up Hayward Field at 9,000 for state championships or NCAA track and field championships. It was empty. It was just a 1920s stadium that got renovated in the 60s, stadium empty. Now it's going to be the premier track and field stadium in the nation, in the entire U.S., probably in North America, or even South America and North America combined.
Why do you think sort of the old guard is upset about this?
It just sounds like a get off my lawn, I can't see the future. And I was a little, you know, I watched it get torn down. I drove from Portland to Eugene just to watch it get bulldozed. And I had memories watching the trials in 08 and 12 at the old Hayward Field, and it was magical. But it'll be magical in the future. Like Nike and Phil Knight, I say Nike because it's basically Phil Knight spending, you know, the Nike money on whatever he wants. And I would argue it does fit in. Matthew Knight is the new wave of Oregon athletics, does its thing on the U of O campus, where the Hatfield-Dowlin complex, the Jaquess Center, the softball center, everything that's athletics is touched by Phil Knight, and it's new and fancy and shiny. And everything that's public that's funded through not Phil Knight is brick and old school and has a little bit of modernness here and there. But it's this crazy dichotomy of like Oregon athletics versus the Oregon, you know, school.
So yeah. I think you raise a great point, Jeff, about, you know, people complaining about going big. I say it all the time, make no small plans. And I generally am getting on the people who make small plans when I'm saying that. But here's Oregon and Phil Knight. I mean, they're going big. They're taking their shot. Figure out, like, you build a stage, right? You build a theater. You build the theater or the stage first. Then you bring in a director, actors, production crew, lighting, and you say, all right, what kind of play are we going to have on this stage? And I think sometimes that's dictated by how big the stage is. You don't start it by going, well, we got this little dinky play. Let's build a little dinky stage to put it on. That's not how it works. So I do, like, I am conflicted because I don't really understand either the degree to which people get upset over how Phil Knight wants to spend his money. I noticed something the other day. It was Phil Knight's birthday. And the University of Oregon put out a video on social media with all the coaches and players sort of saying, thank you, Uncle Phil. Did you guys see this? Thank you, Uncle Phil. Thanks, Uncle Phil. When I got to the state of Oregon in 2002, if you had brought up the idea of quote-unquote Uncle Phil to people at Oregon, they would have bristled. There was the adverse reaction. They didn't really embrace it. I'm kind of glad that Oregon is saying, let's put our arms around this guy. He's been such a huge part of what has been our success. And I'm not going to sit back and tell Phil Knight how to spend his money. He wants to put two giant phallic...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.